The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. On this episode of the program, we have two separate segments which each deal with both history and community. In a matter of seconds, you'll be hearing from a professor at Montclair State University who works with the Center for Digital Humanities, and we'll be talking about a digital history about Haiti. And later on in the program, you'll be hearing an interview about a fascinating aspect of World War II that happened right here at home in New Jersey. It's all coming up right now on Humanities Connection. The Haitian Revolution happened not long after ours here in the United States. As an American, I have the opportunity to read many first-hand documents from our revolution, and I have the advantage of being able to read them in my own native language of English. For many people in Haiti, that is not an opportunity that they have. However, that can change, thanks in part to a grant from the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, for something called A Colony in Crisis. It's a digital history project, and the person who is spearheading this is our guest here in our TNEC studio at WFDU right now. She is Dr. Laurence J. Rayon Ibrahim Ayibo, Assistant Professor in the Department of Modern Languages and Literatures at Montclair State University. Laurence, thank you very much for taking the time to be here in the program.
My pleasure.
Let's begin, and I know I'm kind of forcing you into telling the whole history of a revolution, but with just a quick synopsis of the Haitian Revolution and a successful struggle for independence.
Mm-hmm. So slaves initiated the rebellion in 1791, and by 1803, they had successfully ended not only slavery, but French control over the colony, which was called Saint-Domingue at that time.
Okay, so that was the name of the colony, and
yes,
to the French, it was extremely important. Explain to the audience why. Saint-Domingue, is that's about as close as I can get to a French pronunciation, now referred to as Haiti. Why that was so valuable to France?
Okay, Saint-Domingue was then the richest colony of France. It provided the wealth that fueled the French Empire, and it produced 2/3 of the sugar and 3/4 of the coffee that was consumed in Europe.
It's amazing how many wars and how much colonial exploitation took place simply because of food and spices and condiments. Mm-hmm. But it really is true. I mean, whether it was for rum or whether it was sugar or tobacco or whatever. So, again, it is amazing because there hadn't been, even in most modern history, many successful slave revolts. I mean, the Civil War takes on in the United States a whole total different aspect because it involved the government and the military. It wasn't just a slave rebellion. But this worked. This gave the Haitian people their own nation. But they're mainly speaking French, and they are mainly any documents that are being written are written in French. And part of your project is to translate this and to also for your students to translate this into something called Haitian Creole. What is Creole and why is it an important part of the Haitian identity?
So Haitian Creole is a French-based Creole language spoken by 10 to 12 million people worldwide. And it's the native language of Haitian people. So in Haiti, you have two official languages, Haitian Creole and French. And most of the education takes place in French. But, you know, Haitian Creole is the language spoken at home for social interactions. It's the language you grew up with. It's the native language, if you will.
So let me get this straight. A Colony in Crisis is a document from the time of the Haitian Revolution. And these students are getting to translate it into Haitian Creole?
Absolutely. So it's a set of 24 archives, texts, if you will, that have already been translated into English. So when I came across the existing digital project called The Colony in Crisis, I was wondering why they were not Haitian Creole translations. And when I reached out to the initiators of the project, they told me that it was the next step. So they were really ready to embrace the next step of Haitian Creole translations.
What is a digital history project? I threw that term out there, and I'm not even totally sure what it is.
So the digital humanities is a field that applies computational methods to the humanities. So, for example, what we will be able to do with those translations is not only have written translations, but also audio recordings of those translations, because we want to accommodate the Haitian people, and most of them, some of them, are more comfortable with a recording.
That makes sense, though, because of the fact that so many of us now want to hear something, want to see something, and I don't want reading to go away, but that's really valuable. Now, our initial broadcast is in February of 2018. We often repeat the shows in the summertime or anytime later in the year. So let's say we're replaying this in the summertime. Where might you be with this project and some of the audio aspects of it?
Right. So we are planning to start the first recordings in February or March of this year, of 2018. So by the summer, we hope to have a couple of additional written translations into Haitian Creole and a couple of audio recordings made by the students themselves.
But what's the content of the document? I was talking about in my introduction, as an American, I can read certain firsthand documents, whether they be from Paine or Jefferson or whomever. But in the situation here, you've got a document which is key to the revolution. What exactly is the colony in crisis?
Okay. So these are archival sources that document political life, commerce, and the lives of slaves and free people of color, and the moments leading up to the Haitian Revolution. So you might have seen that there was a grain shortage at that time. So there was a dispute between merchants in France and deputies in France and the planters on Saint-Domingue. So the planters in Saint-Domingue claimed that there was this grain shortage was leading to a famine, that they couldn't feed the slaves properly. But this was a myth, because slaves were not fed flour, for example.
So they're not fed the grain,
no.
But the claim is
yeah.
that the grain shortage is creating a famine because they can't feed it
yes.
to them, and they don't feed it to them to begin with.
Yes. So there was, you know, there was malnutrition, malnourishment, but the roots of the problem was overpopulation and slavery, you know, and also the plantation of luxury goods such as coffee and sugar. When you have those big plantations, then you don't have the soil to plant local produce that the people would use.
So this document is giving students of history also a real insight into all the causes,
all the causes.
Different, and so many different groups have an agenda. Obviously, the slaves want freedom, and the planters want to be able to trade with a country other than France, so they have to come up with their own story. They have their own motivation. You have so many different constituencies here that it is a good piece of history. But let's talk about your students. These students who are working on the translation have a Haitian background?
So Pierre Malbranche and Daphé Vastin, I want to thank them today for the extraordinary work, are some of my translation students in the French-English translation programs. So when I came across this project, they are both Haitian. So their native language is Haitian. So I talked to them, and they immediately embarked on the project. So all the methodology, the strategies that we've been discussing in class, they are able to apply those to this particular project.
What does it mean to them? Has it actually meant something to them personally?
Of course, tremendously. And they immediately embarked on the project before we received a grant. So they were translating without receiving any, you know, monetary compensation. It means a lot to them.
You said to me before the broadcast that this is not just a translation project, that it's actually a form of activism. Why is it a form of activism?
Translation as activism starts with the kind of text you pick. All right. These texts are about their own history, but has never been translated into their own language. So the sheer fact of selecting those texts is a form of activism. And then the language they translate it into, because, you know, the bulk of translations into Haitian Creole is related to international aid, for example.
It is interesting simply how language can be used. It is the language of the colonial power as contrasted to the language of the people. And, of course, French is a beautiful language. You come from France yourself, but it's not their language. And I think that's what's so important to people.
Yes, they do have French. They do master French, but it's not their native language.
Right, right.
And they need to create narrative in their own language for their own community.
Right. And when I said their language, of course, you know, we're talking about the language spoken at home or the language spoken among friends or the first way, you know, in which you start to think in terms of day-to-day living. That's what I meant by their own language. Let's talk a little bit about the translation process, though, because you are, in essence, a language professor, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm a translation professor.
So the translation process, my image is people in the United Nations with earphones on, like the ones that I'm wearing, and they're doing the consecutive translation, which is kind of mechanical and also very necessary so as not to start a world war. But you told me in our preparation for this conversation that it's not that mechanical at all. There's more to it. Talk to the audience a little bit about the translation process.
Yes. Many people have an oversimplified vision of what translation entails, one word replacing another. This is, of course, a myth, and it's much more complex because no translator works at the word level. You work with, you know, other narratives in your mind. You work with a whole context. So to give you an example, let's take the geography of the island. Some of the ports' names have changed. So the students have to come up with a strategy. Will they insert a footnote to give the actual name to in present-day Haiti? Or do they have to embed something in the text to make sure that their readers understand what they're talking about?
You're listening to Humanities Connection. I'm Bob Mann. This is a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. The program is heard once a month on the radio, and then it is archived, and that is at njhumanities.org. And we're talking about A Colony in Crisis, which is a translation project. It's actually also a digital history project. And let's talk just a little bit about the role of NJCH, the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, Laurence, because I think that the grant had to be important in terms of some of the expenses that you encountered.
Absolutely. So when we started the first few translations, the students translated pro bono. So to make any project sustainable, you have to and viable in the future, you have to have some means to support the project. And the New Jersey Council for the Humanities provided those means so that the students can be remunerated for their work. We do not want to replicate what happened in the past with people working for free. This is something I wanted to avoid at all costs.
Right, and that it is important because it is such a tremendous investment in time and effort. You mentioned when you talked about the whole process that you really throw a lot of yourself into it. Obviously, I was reading your bio, and you are fluent in quite a few languages, and I am desperately struggling to learn Spanish before I go to Spain in the summertime. For Americans, it's tough. I mean, a lot of people are bilingual in English and Spanish, but that's about it. Is it our geography? What is it that separates us so much that we speak English and maybe one other language?
Oh, all right. So, you know, English has a special status in the world because it's a dominant language. So as an American, you don't feel, you know, compelled or forced by necessity. You don't have to speak other languages, although, you know, there's many Spanish speakers mm-hmm. in the Americas. So I think for Europeans, you grew up learning two foreign languages. And for immigrants like my Haitian students, they have to learn another language by necessity.
Right. So it's the necessity, really, because if you were going to go the equivalent of New York City out to Western New Jersey, you'd probably need to know about three languages growing up in Europe. Just simply taking the train from Brussels to Amsterdam, you'd
Absolutely.
Be dealing with so many different things. In the short time that we have left, what, Laurence, is the most important take-home message about A Colony in Crisis and the project that you're doing? What would you say is the most important thing for people to know?
All right. So I think the most important thing that we're doing right now, we are creating a community of people involved in ethical processes. So we're creating a community across multiple institutions in the United States, and we want to create a community with our partners in Haiti in the long run.
Thank you so much for being here on this segment of the program. Dr. Laurence J. Rayon Ibrahim Ayibo talking about a colony in crisis.